And a good Thursday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part, as always, by the good folks over at The Law Group. Visit them online, lawgroupnc.com. We'll have more from them coming up a little bit later on in the program this morning. We have got a jam-packed Thursday morning coming up for you. A lot of news to get into here across the state of North Carolina. Of course, a tragedy unfolding in Dallas, Texas yesterday at an ICE facility, and the tropics are heating up as we head into the latter parts of September. We'll do the best to get through all of that this morning. However, we will start here in North Carolina, where the Vice President of the United States and J.D. Vance was here yesterday. He was in Concord, just north of Charlotte, discussing, well, law and order, discussing some of the circumstances that allowed the murder of 23-year-old Irina Zaruska on the Charlotte light rail back on August the 22nd. This story got major national attention in the latter parts of August, beginning of September. The coverage, a lot of it stopped, or I shouldn't say stopped. A lot of it was preempted, of course, with the assassination of Charlie Kirk back 2 weeks ago, and now you're starting to see the attention come back to the state of North Carolina as voters across this state and many other states continue to question some of these policies that are being enacted by those on the political left. So this was some of the opening commentary from the vice president in Concord yesterday.
But I want to just say that being here in North Carolina, we're here to talk about law and order. We're here to talk about law enforcement, and we're here to talk about the basic fact that you all pay your taxes, they go to safe streets and safe cities. You ought to be able to enjoy the places that were built by your tax dollars. You ought to be afraid, the criminals ought to be afraid of you. You ought not be afraid of the criminals. It's very simple. And I think for too long in this country, we actually took the exact wrong approach. We told people that if you were walking down a city street and there was a crazy person over there yelling and screaming at your kids, you ought to walk to the other side of the street rather than possibly be accosted by a violent person. Well, you know what I think? I think that if a person is being violent and threatening to young children and young families, they ought to send their asses to prison instead of telling people that they got to cross the other side of the street. You know, a couple years ago, I took my family to New York City. This was when I was in the United States Senate. We spent a few days there. It was a wonderful trip in a lot of ways. But, you know, every time we went to the subway, I'd have one of my kids grabbing onto my leg or afraid because there was a crazy person yelling, hollering, and screaming at a three-year-old little kid. Why do we live like this? Why do we accept this in our communities? And the answer is because of bad political leadership. We have accepted for too long this idea that we ought to give over our streets to criminals and to vagrants and to people who are screaming at us instead of taking back our streets with our incredible law enforcement.
Some pretty solid points there from the vice president. You know, this, you go back 5 years or so to the summer of peace and love in 2020. That's when you saw probably the largest ever organized yet anti-police movement in the country. That's the defund the police crowd. You'll remember all the sayings, pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon, so on and so forth. All of the great chants from those on the political left. And so you go back to 2020 when a lot of this was unfolding, and it is amazing. And I'm not saying 5 years is a short amount of time, but in the grand scheme of things, it is amazing to see how much things have changed in the last 5 years. We were at a period of time, just not that long ago, where you had elected members of Congress, you had prominent Democrats talking about defunding law enforcement. And predictably, I saw this coming, you saw this coming as well, the American people would unequivocally, without a doubt, reject that premise. The American public, who wants, as J.D. Vance noted, wants their safe streets to be safe, wants their communities, their towns, the places that they live and work, they want the area in which they live to be safe. And as he noted, and I agree with him, for far too long, we have admonished the responsibility of criminals. We have set up a system in many blue-run cities, and that's predominantly where this issue exists, in Democrat-run cities across the country, that if you are a criminal, we are going to treat you with some sort of higher level of compassion than law-abiding citizens. We are going to pander to criminals. We are going to pander to repeat offenders and violent individuals, all in the name of compassion and kindness. And I played a great clip yesterday of Representative Brendan Jones on the House floor earlier this week asking, where's the compassion when somebody is slitting the throat of Irina Zaruska on the Charlotte Lyra? I'm sorry to be graphic, but where's the compassion of the individual committing the heinous act? Right. In retrospect, we have to sit back and Monday morning quarterback this thing and listen to the Democrats pander to us about, how you got to be compassionate. This person's dealing with a mental health crisis. You've got to be compassionate. They're in crisis. They're dealing with a crisis. To hell with that. Why are we having to bend over backwards to be compassionate to dangerous, violent criminals? J.D. Vance said it. Throw their ass in jail. It's not very complicated. I'm not advocating for mass incarceration of everybody. That's not the policy. But when you've got DeCarlos Brown Jr., a 34-year-old schizophrenic who has been convicted 14 times, when you have got him roaming your streets, you as a city, you as a community have screwed up. You have completely screwed up. In no normal, just, rational society should somebody like that be attempting to assimilate with law-abiding individuals. Folks, it just doesn't work. Now, is the solution to take somebody that is severely mentally ill? Is the solution to throw them in a cell and throw away the key? I don't think so. But let's be perfectly honest. We used to have a system in this country where there were mental hospitals. There were mental institutions. And let's look at who got rid of those. You can absolutely point the finger at the Democrat Party, who, again, in an attempt to be compassionate, said, we can't throw these people in a mental institution. We can't throw them in a mental hospital. So we just need to allow them to roam the streets of your cities. When these facilities started being shut down in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, maybe even in the 60s, this was the unfortunate end result. And now, of course, you've got Democrats bitching and complaining about how there's not enough resources for mental health. There's not enough beds available. You guys shut down all of these facilities in an attempt to be compassionate. I'll throw that in air quotes for those listening on your various podcast feeds this morning. In an attempt to be kind. In an attempt to be compassionate. We had to shut all of those facilities down because they were inhumane, according to those on the left. So now there is, in fact, no place to put somebody like DeCarlos Brown Jr., a schizophrenic, violent criminal. And now I have to sit through and listen to people like Marsha Morey out of Durham County lecture me about how there's not enough resources available. Give me a freaking break. The vice president said that supporting and following policies of law and order, well, no surprise to you, no surprise to me, they're not all that complicated.
So this is what it means. Being pro-law and order is actually not that difficult. There are some things we do, some issues we address that are so complicated and so challenging, but supporting our local law enforcement is actually pretty easy. It's just a question of political willpower. Here's thing number one, very simple. If our great police officers find a violent criminal and lock them up, we ought to keep them locked up instead of letting them back on our streets with a slap on the wrist. That means we want to give our police officers the very best equipment and the very best protection anywhere in the world. We want you guys to have the very best, and we're going to fight every single day to make sure that they have it. It means punishing state and local jurisdictions that restrict your ability to do police work. They just want to do their jobs. They ought to be allowed to do it.
That's a very important part of this discussion. And the defund police movement obviously did not garner any long-term support. It's a disastrous policy. But one thing that has kind of stuck on through this period of time is the way in which local governments, local entities, essentially tie the hands of law enforcement. And I will admit that some of the media coverage of law enforcement actions don't help as well. And I'm not saying the media doesn't need to cover what law enforcement does. But think about the situation that exists. You've got cops that have to make split-second life or death situations. They don't have the hindsight of looking back at surveillance video. They don't have the hindsight of being able to break down a video clip frame by frame by frame to determine what they need to do. They need to act in a split second to protect themselves, their fellow law enforcement partners, the community as a whole. They've got to make decisions rapidly. And there's so much scrutiny on decisions that law enforcement made in hindsight with days, weeks, months to deconstruct the situation that I would suspect that that is on the minds of many in law enforcement when they are out there doing their job. They are worrying about the scrutiny that is going to happen if, God forbid, they pull their gun and have to shoot and kill somebody or shoot and wound somebody. So you've got that problem that exists. In many communities like the Charlotte-Mecklenburg area, like many other Democrat blue cities, police have consistent run-ins with individuals, are consistently arresting them for them to just immediately be released and put back out onto the street. You create a completely unsustainable situation for law enforcement. You create a system in which law enforcement is not capable of doing their job. They can do the part of their job fine. But then when it gets handed off to the judicial system and you've got left-wing magistrates and left-wing judges that allow these individuals right back out on the streets, you're putting law enforcement at a disadvantage. DeCarlos Brown Jr. was well known by CMPD. He was well known by law enforcement in and around Charlotte and Mecklenburg County. Well known. Had just had a run-in with law enforcement days before he decided that he was going to slit the neck of Irina Zaruska on the Charlotte light rail. This was not a random guy that just popped up out of nowhere. Right? We talk about the homelessness issue in Wilmington. The individuals that are running around the street smoking crack or shooting up heroin in broad daylight on 3rd Street, those individuals are not random. Police know who they are. But because we wanted to be compassionate to these individuals, because they're struggling with addiction, because they're struggling with mental health, we have created a revolving door in the judicial system that puts law enforcement at a huge disadvantage. It's wrong. It does not keep a community safe or secure, and it is leading to the downfall of many major cities. Look at Washington, D.C. What, more than 1,500 carjackings a year? Murders a couple of times a week? Now, all that has stopped. And what's the big difference? They didn't change any laws in D.C. President Donald Trump didn't force the D.C. City Council to rewrite a whole bunch of penal codes. No, they just started enforcing the laws that are on the books. The National Guard and President Trump taking over the Capitol Police, or the Metropolitan Police, I should say, and giving them the green light to enforce the laws that are on the books immediately cleaned up the city. So we've got examples of how this process can work, how this situation can play out. So as J.D. Vance says, it's not overly complicated. It's not a hard thing to figure out. We just need to follow it through. This is not, you don't have to have a PhD to figure this thing out. It's pretty simple. Allow law enforcement to do their job. Make sure that the judicial system is holding criminals accountable, and the problem solves itself. It's really not that complicated. Yet, for whatever reason, those on the political left think that this is a winning political message, which I try not to give advice to those on the political left, but I am generally shocked. I spent a lot of time this week watching the ongoings in the North Carolina General Assembly, hours on Monday and Tuesday, watching the ongoings in the House and Senate. And it was amazing to me to see that Democrats still are going down a path where they have not realized how atrocious their systems are, how atrocious their policies are. And in some cases, they're doubling and tripling down on it. This is, you know, we talk about 80-20 political issues. This is the definition of an 80-20 political issue. And once again, the Democrats are on the side of the 20. They're on the side with the radical progressive wing of the Democrat Party that believes that police should be defunded, that you shouldn't arrest or charge anybody for anything. We should live in some weird anarchist society where anybody can do whatever the hell they want. It's unsustainable. And voters across the country, red and blue voters, have rejected this premise. They have rejected these policies from those on the left. And it makes sense because they no longer feel safe in their communities. They no longer feel safe in the place in which they live, work, and play. They don't want to go downtown. They don't want to take their families out on a Saturday. They're concerned that they're going to be harassed by the homeless, that they're going to have to deal with a mentally deranged individual who is well known by law enforcement harassing them and their families. So what do? They stay home. They don't patronize local businesses. The impacts of this are very real, not just from a safety standpoint. Obviously, a lot of attention here on North Carolina because a 23-year-old Ukrainian refugee was murdered. But think about the lingering effects of this. The effects on the restaurants, the bars, the shops, the small businesses that exist in these city centers. Look at what's going on in San Francisco. Literally every business has moved out of downtown. They're all gone. Why? Because it's not safe. They can't get anybody to work there. It's unsafe for their employees and there's no business. So what happens? Businesses close. They shutter their doors. They close up shop. We've seen it time and time again. And for whatever reason, I'm fine with the Democrats continuing down this path, but for whatever reason, something is telling them that they need to continue fighting this losing battle. It makes absolutely no sense to me at all. The vice president, of course, highlighted the situation with Irina Zaruska and talked about that as well in Concord yesterday.
And here's the basic summary, as far as I can recall it, is you have a violent criminal who has been arrested 14 times, often for very violent offenses, who gets on a bus with an innocent young girl, 22 years old, and slits her throat and she dies. She died because she was coming home from work. She worked at a pizzeria. She came from a beautiful family. She had a young boyfriend. She had her entire life ahead of her. And she was actually a refugee from Ukraine. So she came from a war-torn country. She sought shelter in the United States of America. And because of soft-on-crime policies, she was murdered here, not in the war-torn country she came from. Isn't that a disgrace? And isn't that an insult to the incredible law enforcement officers who arrested this person 14 times? They did everything that they could to keep this thug off the streets, and it was the political leadership that failed, and we got to be honest about that. I saw former Governor Cooper say, and this is Michael Whatley's opponent, former Governor Cooper said just a couple of days after the attack that we have got to do more when it comes to law enforcement to keep people like this off the streets. And my response was, Governor, he was arrested 14 times. Law enforcement did their job. It's time for you to do your job.
And you're seeing a lot of pushback and a lot of emphasis on these policies, this racial crime task force that was started in 2020 during the summer of peace and love when your cities were burned to the ground by violent left-wing agitators. The Racial Justice Task Force started under Roy Cooper, under the direction of the Attorney General's office, who was at the time Democrat AG Josh Stein. He's now our governor. And you're seeing these ideas, these policies being rejected. And the assertion that law enforcement didn't do their job in the Charlotte situation is completely freaking insane. I mean, there's no justification for it. I played this clip yesterday But I'm going to play it again for you. This is Democrat Representative Marsha Morey out of Durham. Surprise, surprise. Another progressive hellhole here in North Carolina. This is Representative Marsha Morey on the floor of the North Carolina House on Tuesday blaming police for how the DeCarlos Brown situation unfolded. Blaming law enforcement for not doing their job. Take a listen to this.
We were all appalled, in shock, and I would say this crime probably could not have been prevented. There was an officer 20 feet away. Was he able to jump into the car and stop it? No. Many of us have seen the horrible video. It was about 3 seconds. And yet we talk about the person alleged in this crime, how he got out on a promise to appear, even though that was 8 months before this happened in Charlotte. 8 months. And why was he brought before a magistrate in January? Because he was at a hospital saying he had material in his head. He was obviously going through a mental health crisis. Obviously going through a mental health crisis. And what did the officer do? They could have gone to a mental health professional and got an involuntary commitment. What did the officer do? Handcuffed, and let's take him to a magistrate. Let's book him on a criminal charge of misuse of a 911 system. It is not a violent offense. And that magistrate went to the suggested bail guidelines. And because of that charge, gave a written promise to appear, which is common. And in all of your districts, or most of them, you have suggested bail guidelines.
It is truly remarkable to watch the stupidity of Democrats. And I mean, obviously, I understand that we're on the wrong side of, you know, I don't agree with them politically. And so I'm not just saying, oh, they're stupid because I disagree with them. They're stupid because of the absolutely insane comments that they make. You have got an elected member of the North Carolina General Assembly blaming the police for DeCarlos Brown Jr.'s 14 convictions in which there is no circumstances in which he should be allowed back on the streets. None. Zero. If you live in a society that believes in law and order. If you live in a society where you're trying to protect the public. But because of Democrats' inability, this has been the repeating theme literally since I started this podcast back in January. The repeating theme is the Democrats' either unwillingness or inability to look in the mirror at all. There is no place for them to do any sort of self-reflection on the things that they do, the policies they support, and the things that they enact that allow these terrible things to happen. We'll talk about the situation out of Dallas coming up a little bit later on in the show this morning. Another circumstance, another situation where Democrats and their demonization of law enforcement, calling Immigration and Customs Enforcement the Gestapo, equating them to the brown shirts of Nazi Germany, leads to people doing insane things. There is no self-reflection on the Democrat side of the aisle. How stupid, how incompetent do you have to be to stand up on the floor of the North Carolina House and proclaim and profess that if law enforcement had done their job, that Irina Zaruska would still be alive? They'd already arrested him. He's only been convicted 14 times. You have no idea how many times he's been arrested. It could be 30 or 40 times. But this is the Democrats and their policies that they don't want to face. They don't want to have to admit that the things that they do, the things that they support, don't freaking work. So now we're going to blame the men and women, unlike Marsha Morey, who does nothing, stands up and gaslights and pontificates on the House floor while she's on the losing side of every freaking vote, not too dissimilar from Deb Butler, another loser in North Carolina politics. These people don't lead anything. They're not part of any discussions. They're not making any impact. They're not making any change. They stand up and they make completely absurd, ridiculous, and stupid comments. That's all they're providing for their for their constituents in Durham or in the city of Wilmington under Deb Butler. They don't do anything. They don't introduce any legislation, nothing. They're useless. And they're going to tell the men and women of law enforcement who each and every morning put on their uniform, put on their badge, and put their lives at risk in a variety of challenges each and every day that they need to do their job better. It's shameful. But unfortunately, it's totally par for the course for those on the left. And so my intention this morning was to play through a lot more of J.D. Vance, but there's just so much news and so much going on that I need to get into. But there was a question and answer period in which the vice president was asked some questions by local media, you know, unlike what you saw to the previous administration, consistently talking to the press, consistently talking to the media. And J.D. Vance was asked about these local communities, places like Charlotte, and why things are not being done differently. And, you know, of course, a lot of the emphasis over the last few weeks has been, oh, well, you know, the federal government is streaming in law enforcement to cities across the country. And, oh, my God, it's an authoritarian takeover. J.D. Vance, I thought, handled this very well. Take a listen to this.
You can tell how many carjackings there are. You can tell how many armed robberies there are. There's way too much violent crime happening in our country. And when we look at an American community, again, we don't care about their politics. When we look at an American community where people are suffering because of violent crime, our response is, we want to help, just let us. And I'd encourage everybody to talk to your local officials. I know we're a little far away from Charlotte, but to talk to your local officials and encourage them to ask for the help of the Trump administration. We are willing to provide it. We want fewer people to be affected by violent crime, but these guys have actually got to play a partnership role with us. And unfortunately, way too many of them, some of these people, it's crazy. They are ruling over cities that have violent crime rates that are worse than Mogadishu, and they say, no, we don't want Donald Trump to come in. Well, excuse me, if you don't need the federal help, then why is your murder rate so terrible in the first place? You do need the help, you just need to admit it.
And I think that's what it comes down to. Absolutely spot on by Vice President J.D. Vance. You just have to admit it. And that seems to be the biggest problem that those on the left are dealing with right now. Even after all of everything that you've seen over the last month or so. Irina Zaruska's murder in Charlotte. Charlie Kirk being shot and killed by a left-wing assassin. Yesterday, another left-wing individual shooting and attempting to kill ICE officers in Dallas, Texas. There's just no ability to admit that we need help. Democrats believe that everything that they support is these big pearly gates. Everything is perfect. Everything is great. We have the best ideas, even though you can look at the numbers. You can look at the crime statistics. You can look at what's going on in your cities and objectively should be able to say, this is not working. This is not sustainable, but they're just unwilling to do it. So I'll have a full link to J.D. Vance's comments in Concord if you've got 45 minutes or so. It's definitely worth a listen. The cup overfloweth this morning in terms of content, so that's all we've got time for. I'll throw a link to that over in our show notes at patreon.com/Nick Craig, where you can join and support the show financially and get access to bonus content. $5-$10 a month, literally for the price of one cup of coffee. You can support the show per month over at patreon.com/Nick Craig and get access to those daily show notes and more. Appreciate those that support the show on Patreon. So early this morning during the 5 a.m. hour, when I was on hosting the Carolina Journal News Hour in Charlotte, glanced over and I saw that Phil Berger Sr., the leader of the North Carolina Senate, was on Fox News. He was on Fox and Friends First and was discussing Arena's Law, discussing the murder in Charlotte, discussing the vice president's visit yesterday. So I've got a couple of clips from that. Here's the Senate leader on soft on crime policies, policies that we know don't work. Here's Phil Berger.
Yeah, so tragedy that someone is seemingly safer in a war zone than on public transportation in one of our major cities. And the vice president coming to North Carolina actually highlighted the concerns that we have about some of the soft on crime policies that have been implemented, many at the behest of former Governor Roy Cooper, who put forward a task force several years ago that came up with a number of recommendations that policies that would call for cashless bail, policies that would prioritize the release of violent criminals over the safety of the public. And all of that just has come to a fore at this point. And with the terrible tragedy dealing with Irina and her unfortunate death.
And that's exactly the case. Point the finger where it needs to be pointed. Roy Cooper, Attorney General Josh Stein, and Democrats in major cities across North Carolina that have decided that it is no longer important to enforce the law, that they want to be compassionate to criminals and make you the victim of violent crime. It's really not that complicated. The leader of the Senate also discussed some of the details of Irina's law, as we covered. It did pass the North Carolina House and Senate, and it now sits on Governor Josh Stein's desk.
So what it does is it eliminates cashless bail for some of these violent offenders, or for all the violent offenders. It prioritizes the safety of the public over the release of folks who are charged with violent crimes. And the third thing that we've done is taken steps to begin the process of implementing the death penalty in North Carolina, which has actually been on the books for years, but because of soft on crime policies at the executive, the administrative, and the judicial level has not been carried out in North Carolina in well over a decade.
And that's how Democrats have decided that they're going to frame this whole discussion. It's not about law and order. It's not about protecting somebody like Irina Zaruska. It's not about protecting anything or anybody. They have completely pivoted the conversation away from all of that and are putting all of their focus on the death penalty. They are putting all of their focus on that as, I don't know, they believe that's the winning message. Like, so they're just going to ignore everything that's going on, ignore the death of somebody like Irina, and they're just going to hammer Republicans on the death penalty as, oh, it's inhumane. Oh, it's barbaric. I mean, they're just completely missing the message and trying to pivot to something that just makes no sense. The big question with Irina's law, as I mentioned, it has passed both the both chambers of the General Assembly. Will Democrat Governor Josh Stein sign it? This is a big political issue unfolding here in North Carolina. Phil Berger was asked that question on Fox News this morning.
I have not had a conversation with him about whether he will sign it or not sign it. I know that based on votes in the North Carolina Senate by the Democrats, and actually based on the failure of a number of Democrats to actually take a vote, they scattered from the Senate when it came time to vote, only had 8 left out of the 20 members. And so I just don't know. I hope that he will. It's the right thing for him to do. It's the right thing for the safety of the people of North Carolina. It's the right thing to show that we are serious about dealing with the crime problem.
Yeah, serious about it. And again, the math on this, and this is going to be a very interesting thing that I'm sure Stein and his folks are kind of dealing with and going through right now. Because you look at House Bill 307, that is Irina's law. That's the piece of legislation. And you look at the votes in the North Carolina House. I'm going to pull this up so that you can, so we can look at it together. It's probably a little hard to read, but this is the breakdown. So you had 81 that voted in favor of it, and 31 that voted against it. Now, when you look at those that voted for it, obviously all of the Republicans voted in favor of it, but you've got a list here of Democrats that did. I mean, you've got more than a dozen Democrats that voted for this legislation, and that is incredibly relevant in the North Carolina House because they are one vote, and I say they, the Republicans in the majority, they are one vote shy of the supermajority, which is what they need to override a veto from Democrat Governor Josh Stein. In the Senate, it's not a problem. With every Republican there, they don't need any Democrat votes. In the House, completely different ballgame. They need one Democrat, and there's a list of a dozen of them here that did vote, in fact, for Irina's law. So this is a very tricky political situation for Josh Stein to navigate. If he signs this into effect, which is what he should do, if he signs this legislation into law, he is going to get hammered by those on the progressive left, that he is cowtailing, that he is bending over to those in the General Assembly, the evil, awful, terrible Republicans, and is not fighting for justice. On the flip side, if he doesn't sign this legislation and the General Assembly has to come back and do a veto override of it, him and Roy Cooper are going to get hammered for their continued soft on crime policies. So from a purely political, from a purely optical political standpoint, this is a very, very tricky situation for somebody like Stein to navigate. So it's on his desk right now. As of early this morning, there was still no reporting, no indication whether the governor was or was not going to sign this. So we just kind of wait and see. He's got 12, it's either 12 or 14 days. It's the number's escaping me right now, but either 12 or 14 days to either sign the legislation, veto it, or it becomes law automatically. I don't think he'll go through that approach with it, but that's kind of the clock is ticking right now. And just in terms of a practical timeline, if he does veto the legislation, lawmakers are expected to be back in Raleigh a little less than a month from now, the week of October the 20th, according to their most recent adjournment resolution. They would be back and could vote on a veto override of this legislation. So that's the timeline right now. I'll be keeping an eye on some of the comments there from the governor's office and see what he does. And as soon as we get those, we'll pass them along to you right here on the Nick Craig Show. Again, we've got a lot to get into, a busy Thursday edition. But before that, and really the only way that any of this is possible, is thanks to our great advertisers that support the program, which includes the Law Group. And I want to let you know that when legal challenges arise, whether you want them to arise or not, if they do, you need to put your trust in Melissa Gott and the great team over at the Law Group right here in Wilmington. For now, more than 22 years, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across Eastern North Carolina. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong criminal defense, the Law Group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved as quickly as possible. Great news, folks. It's not a big national law firm. They're in our backyard. They're members of our community, and they're located in downtown Wilmington, just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. For any legal problems, any legal questions, give them a call, 910-251-6088, or their great website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. And we cannot thank Melissa and her team over at the Law Group enough for their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. We'll take a quick break, reset, and turn our attention to Dallas, Texas, where yesterday an individual before daybreak started shooting at an ICE facility, killing one individual before, as you would expect, cowardly taking his own life. We'll get into those details coming up here in just a few minutes as the Nick Craig Show rolls on a Thursday morning, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Good Thursday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. The program streams live each and every weekday morning. If you'd like to join us live, 7 a.m. YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. As we continue our coverage this morning on what it was a busy news day yesterday, a situation unfolding really right as we ended the show yesterday morning out of Dallas, Texas, as a gunman, and initial reports were an individual had shot up and was taking shots at an ICE facility located just north of downtown Dallas. And that is the situation that was being tracked throughout the day. An individual that was responsible for that turned the gun on himself and cowardly shot and killed himself on a nearby rooftop where he was shooting into that ICE facility. And unfortunately, this morning, the details are that the shooter did kill one migrant before turning the gun on himself. And it is another situation, according to the FBI, of political terrorism. Another situation where an individual listening to media coverage, in all likelihood, listening to media coverage, listening to those on the political left describe and equate ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, to that of brown shirts in Nazi Germany, calling them the Gestapo, making claims that they're ripping families apart. I mean, NBC News just earlier this week got into an incredible amount of heat for an article that they published in which they claimed that ICE had detained a 5-year-old autistic girl in an attempt to try and get her father to surrender. This was the headline from NBC News on X 2 days ago, directly from NBC News. ICE agents held a 5-year-old autistic girl outside her Massachusetts home to pressure her father to surrender to authorities last week, according to the girl's family. That is an incredibly concerning headline if it was true. Immigration and Customs Enforcement took advantage of a 5-year-old autistic girl to try and get her father, who may have been, I guess, was probably illegally in the country, out of his house. That's an incredibly concerning headline. That was, of course, not the truth. NBC deleted that post and followed it up by saying this. Video shows ICE with a 5-year-old girl while agents attempt to arrest her father. Correction. An earlier version of this article mischaracterized the activities of ICE agents in the video. The article has been updated. This is the kind of crap that we're talking about on the right. This is the kind of ridiculous demonization of law enforcement that allows individuals to feel that it is appropriate to shoot and kill ICE, to shoot and kill members of local law enforcement, to shoot and kill people like Charlie Kirk. This is the kind of deranged media coverage that we need to continue to call out on the right. There was no basis, no fact in NBC's original reporting. But it didn't stop them from posting it on X and getting millions upon millions of views. It did not stop them from publishing the article and running it on MSNBC. This, when President Donald Trump, when others talk about the mainstream media, talk about the things that they say, the stories that they write, the articles that they publish, the phrases and words that they use to describe people, this is what we're talking about. This is the kind of dishonest, and in this case, completely false information that is being spun to demonize law enforcement. And there is no question about it. When you call people like Charlie Kirk a Nazi, when you call people like Donald Trump an authoritarian dictator, you beat into people's minds that it is okay to inflict serious pain, death, or violence upon those individuals. And it's the exact same thing with ICE. We have seen a 1,500% increase in attacks on Immigration and Customs Enforcement since the beginning of this year. Why? Because if you turn on MSNBC or you turn on CNN, you will be led to believe that ICE is roaming cities throughout the United States, finding people that aren't white, throwing them in cuffs and rounding them up and ripping families apart. That's what you're being told by those in the mainstream media. Not only is it inaccurate, it's incredibly dangerous because you are allowing mentally ill individuals to believe, well, if that's the case, I need to do something about it. I need to stand up to protect the immigrant community. I need to stand up and protect these individuals. So yesterday in Dallas, Texas, a 29-year-old by the name of Joshua Jahn, J-A-H-N, I think that's how you pronounce the last name, decided right before 7 o'clock local time in Dallas that he was going to perch himself up on a roof across from an ICE facility. And when individuals were coming into that facility, he was going to shoot at them. And that's exactly what he did. He killed one immigrant, injured two others, and then shot himself before law enforcement was able to capture him. And what was written on the bullets in which he was shooting? Anti-ICE. Written on a stripper clip of ammo found near his body. That image published by FBI Director Kash Patel yesterday, showing the bullet, the clip laying on the ground with anti-ICE written on it. Picture is not the highest resolution, but it's very obvious and clear what's written on here. You could see the bullets covered in water. It was pouring rain yesterday when this was going on, or right after this situation took place. So you've got yet another example of a deranged leftist, a deranged radicalized Democrat carrying out an act of political violence. Literally 2 weeks to the day in which Charlie Kirk was shot in the neck and killed by a left-wing radical. And I'm going to be honest, and I guess I'm going to show some of my ignorance here. I was hopeful, optimistically hopeful, and I shouldn't have been, but I was optimistically hopeful that after the Kirk assassination, that after the Utah County prosecutor and their office had a press release, or a press conference, I should say, and announced that this individual had been recently radicalized to the left side of the political aisle, and called that out and made that point, that we would see the media begin to ratchet around, or see this kind of verbiage stop, or at least tone down a little bit. But it hasn't. And so at this point in time, I think it's fair to say that the media is just not going to stop. They are going to continue to claim that Trump is an authoritarian, that anybody that supports him is a Nazi, that anybody that votes for or supports the policies of being tough on crime, getting illegal immigrants out of the country that are not supposed to legally be here, anybody that supports that, you are a Nazi, you are a fascist, you are a racist, you are a bigot. And for those that the brave men and women of Immigration and Customs Enforcement that are literally just enforcing United States immigration law, which has not changed, has been on the books now for decades, those individuals are being demonized as well. And it's obviously not going to stop. We were talking earlier about Democrats' inability to self-reflect, their ability to look in the mirror, just glance in the mirror and see the things that they're doing. They continue with it. And the fact is, it's going to lead to more left-wing violence. It's going to lead to more mentally unstable individuals who happen to be on the left, surprise, surprise, carrying out heinous acts of violence, murdering and killing people because they believe that they're fighting against fascism. They believe that they are fighting against an authoritarian regime. And when you lay that out on paper, it makes sense, doesn't it? Everybody would want to fight against actual fascism. We literally fought World War II over an authoritarian regime in Germany. We fought fascism. 17, 18, 19-year-olds lost their lives fighting fascism, fighting an authoritarian regime, fighting a dictator in Adolf Hitler. And so when on paper you equate Donald Trump, Republicans, and everybody else associated with him, you and me included, to the likes of World War II Nazi Germany, these individuals have the green light to do whatever the hell they want. These individuals feel that they have the green light to inflict death and destruction upon these individuals. I played a clip, it was right after the Kirk assassination, of Greg Gutfeld just absolutely tearing apart Jessica Tarlov on The Five over her claim of, oh, you know, both sides have a problem. Both sides have this, both sides have that. And I'm going to play that. I'm going to play another clip of last night's show on Fox News. But before I play that clip, I want to take you to J.D. Vance in Concord yesterday, where, as you would expect and as you would imagine, there was a lot of conversation about, oh, there's political violence on both sides. And, oh, we, you know, both sides are the problem here. J.D. Vance was talking about that, was asked a question about that in Concord yesterday, and his response was absolutely spot on. Here's the vice president.
Well, don't both sides have crazy people? And of course, obviously, country of 330 million people, of course, both sides have crazy people. But if you look at the political violence in our country over the last couple of months, the last couple of years, it is not a both sides problem. It is primarily on one side of the political aisle. So if we are going to truly go after the political violence in this country, we need the Democratic leadership of Washington, D.C. to look in the mirror. We need them to renounce all political violence. When a poor kid like Charlie Kirk is gunned down in cold blood, we need them to start with condemning the violence instead of condemning something that Charlie Kirk said that they disagreed with. When you have an entire network of left-wing organizations that encourage, that promote, and that apologize for violence, you know what you're going to get out of it? You're going to get political violence. Well, don't both sides have...
And the commentary there from J.D. Vance is absolutely correct. And that is exactly what we've seen in the last couple of weeks, since Kirk's assassination. I mean, they just completely excuse what has gone on. And of course, publicly, they'll make the comment of, oh, I do not condone political violence. We saw a whole bunch of that garbage over the last couple of weeks. But it always goes the same. We don't condone political violence, but Charlie Kirk said a lot of controversial things. We don't condone political violence, but he was a controversial figure and said some things that upset a lot of people. There always has to be a but with it, because they can't just come out and say we condone political violence, because they don't. That's just not true. They want political violence. The reason that they equate ICE to the brown shirts of Nazi Germany, the reason that they equate Donald Trump to Adolf Hitler, is exactly for what's happening. They want people to commit political violence. It's not very complicated. And so last night on The Five, once again, Jessica Tarvlov, who is not a radical progressive, I'll note, but she's a Democrat, continues down this same road, this same bullshit of, oh, both sides, both sides, both sides. And once again, Greg Gutfeld absolutely nuked her, and I'm glad he did. Take a listen to this.
I think that I said anything worthy of you that said, level of explosion.
Your rationalization of both sides, if you have to understand, since Kurt's death, there is no both sides anymore, Jessica.
Why didn't the DOJ take down the study that showed how much right-wing extremism?
What study was that? Which one? The one in The Economist that was sponsored by a group run by a guy in Antifa? That study that has been discredited by the Federalist? You're walking down a really bad alley right now.
Federalist?
Yes. Yes. Okay. I actually did see, Jessica, I did the deep dive on that study. That study was authored by a project that was run by a guy who says he was an Antifa. That is why that whole thing has been scrubbed, okay? It's real simple. You label someone a fascist or a racist or a Nazi, it makes you free to attack them. And that has been the ideology from the start. It's weird.
So why? Let me
talk.
Trump does it.
What?
Just tell me why it's okay.
I'm getting there. Okay. I'm getting there.
Great. I'm enjoying this.
Okay. You won't be for long. The left calls Trump a hate monger. They have called me a hate monger because I ridicule the left. I ridicule protesters. I ridicule academia, Hollywood, the news media. I make fun of The View every day. I make fun of the UN. Guess what? No one acts on the things that I say because my side doesn't do that. We say people are stupid. We say people are wrong, but we don't say they're evil. That is your game, okay? And then you come and you say, okay, ma'am, this is a mentally ill loner. Well, who do you think does this stuff? It's not Ben Affleck. It's not Tom Brady. It's not even Carrot Top. People who do this stuff are always that way. The question is, who points them in that direction? Why pick ICE? Why pick Kirk? Why target TV stations and put bombs under Fox trucks? Huh? Why vandalize memorials? Why kill kids in Catholic schools? Two things can be true. A person can be mentally ill, and you can be guiding him to that place in his life. That is how brainwashing works.
Bravo, Greg Gutfeld. Absolutely calling out the left on this both sides nonsense. It's not. I mean, I've spent my entire professional career in and around the political sector. And what Gutfeld says there absolutely is accurate. We are critical of those on the left. I mean, if you listen to me back on the radio here in Wilmington, my entire time, my 3.5 years on the radio, was all during the Biden administration. And I beat up on the Biden administration day in and day out. I didn't call Joe Biden a Nazi. I didn't call him a dictator. I didn't call him a fascist or an authoritarian regime. I called him stupid and brain dead, which actually turned out to be pretty accurate in hindsight. But you turn on MSNBC and you'll watch Mika Brzezinski and her husband, Joe Scarborough, talk about how ICE is ripping families apart. How the evil, terrible, awful administration is using a 5-year-old autistic girl to get her illegal father immigrant out of the house. The reality is, it's just not true. But it doesn't stop them from saying it. It doesn't stop them from continuing down this path, and it doesn't stop them from repeating this stuff time and time again. Gavin Newsom was just in the media 2 days ago talking about how ICE needs to unmask. ICE needs to unmask themselves. This was not JD Vance. This was Gavin Newsom literally Tuesday, 2 days ago, a day before this shooting in Dallas, Texas. Here's Gavin Newsom speaking in California just 2 days ago.
ICE, unmask. What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of?
What are we afraid of? Well, they're afraid of a radical left-wing lunatic, one of your supporters, shooting and killing them, Gavin. That's what they're afraid of. That's what they're afraid of. The rhetoric that you guys spew, the rhetoric that you guys use to describe your political opponents, that's what they're afraid of. J.D. Vance piggybacked on this in Concord yesterday. Take a listen to this.
And I think that is the most disgusting thing. The very people who keep us safe ought to be honored and protected and praised by Democrats and Republicans alike. It is time to stop the rhetorical assault on law enforcement. Because here's what happens. Because here's what happens when Democrats like Gavin Newsom did say that these people are part of an authoritarian government. When the left-wing media lies about what they're doing, when they lie about who they're arresting, when they lie about the actual job of law enforcement, what they're doing is encouraging crazy people to go and commit violence. You don't have to agree with my immigration policies. You don't have to agree with Donald Trump's immigration policies. But if your political rhetoric encourages violence against our law enforcement, you can go straight to hell and you have no place in the political conversation of the United States of America.
You can go straight to hell. I could not agree anymore with the Vice President of the United States. You can go straight to hell. Joe Scarborough, Mika Brzezinski, every anchor on MSNBC and CNN. Exact same situation. The Democrats have a serious problem that they have to deal with right now. Their political rhetoric on demonizing, not just saying their ideas are bad. Again, there's a difference between being critical and demonizing. I have been critical of political opposition now for almost the better part of a decade in media here in Wilmington. You can be critical. You're allowed to be critical. We live in a country where you have the First Amendment. Nobody is saying that you have to now carry water for Donald Trump. Nobody's saying you have to do that. What we are asking you to do is to stop equating everybody in the country to that doesn't agree with you to the Nazis and to fascists and to authoritarian regimes. You disagree with our policies, fine. Go out and win a freaking election. But you guys can't do that either, because you put up an incredibly unlikable individual like Kamala Harris and then are surprised and shocked when she gets completely blown out of the water by Donald Trump. You're allowed to be critical. You should be critical. I want my politicians, even the ones that agree with me, to be challenged. A critical discussion is good. But demonizing the men and women of law enforcement, claiming that ICE is a brown shirt, Nazi Germany style era law enforcement agency, is completely absurd. And as J.D. Vance noted, it encourages individuals who all happen to be crazy and on the left, no, definitely no link there at all. It encourages these individuals to go out and commit heinous acts of violence. It's very obvious and it's very clear. And it's very, very unfortunate. So if Charlie Kirk wasn't enough for the left to clean up the things that they say, I can't imagine that this situation in Dallas, Texas will be. The unfortunate thing that I have to report to you this morning is it's probably going to get a whole hell of a lot worse before it gets any better. You're going to see more political violence at the hands of the left before somebody has a come to Jesus moment and realizes that this is not good long term. When that happens, what the tipping point is, I don't know. I thought Charlie Kirk would have been that tipping point, but it's not. It hasn't been. So we'll continue to track the situation out of Dallas. Unfortunately, one individual getting killed, the shooter himself being the coward, sissy, left-wing lunatic that he was, turned the gun on himself, as you would expect. These individuals are cowards. They're not strong. They're not man enough to deal with the consequences, the repercussions of the things that they do. So they turn the gun on themselves. Very, very typical for those on the left. So we'll keep an eye on that and continue to provide details as soon as we get them. All right. I know we're running a little long, but there is a couple of weather things that we do need to get into this morning, because the tropics are heating up here towards the end of September. Taking a look at the Atlantic hurricane map this morning from the National Hurricane Center out of Miami, Florida. We now do officially have Tropical Storm Umberto, which is now currently hanging out in the Atlantic. That storm is currently a tropical storm with 45-mile-an-hour winds, and the track of that storm is one that is set to take it, probably splitting the gap between the United States and Bermuda. Probably no immediate impact to the continental United States, the East Coast, maybe besides some increased rip current, things of that nature. However, this other area, Invest 94L, this is the one that we need to keep an eye out for. It's got a 70% chance of development in the next 48 hours, 90% over the next 7 days. And taking a look at some of the spaghetti models that have run for this storm, again, not fear-mongering, not trying to will or wish something into existence, but this is the latest hurricane models that ran overnight. You can see this system forming in near parts of the Dominican Republic, and its track, at least from some of the hurricane models, have it getting very, very close to the southeastern North Carolina coast. Some models show it pushing out to sea, which would obviously be a great situation. Others have it tracking right up to the North or South Carolina coastline. You can see the GFS model here showing some movement of this system as well. The timeline on this, very early next week, looking at Monday, late Monday night, early Tuesday morning, for some impacts from this storm, if it is to develop and if it is to impact. We could definitely see this thing named in the next day or so. So this is something that you're going to want to keep an eye out. I know enjoying your final summer weekends here across southeastern North Carolina, but you're definitely going to want to stay tuned to media over the weekend to see what happens with this. I'll be providing updates all throughout the weekend as well over on my Facebook and X account. If you are not following me there, it's the Nick Craig Show on Facebook. Head on over there and give me a like, and you can follow me on X as well, at Nicholas M. Craig. We'll have some, hopefully some more consensus, some more details tomorrow morning with some of these weather models. But this is definitely something to keep an eye out for, and some of these models do show it as it picking up some strength. I saw a post from a great website, Mike's Weather Page, that keeps the tropics up to date. A couple of posts showing some of the various ensemble models showing this thing potentially getting very, very close to the North Carolina coast. You can see the GFS model, the European model, and some of the other weather models, the CMC and others, showing this thing getting dangerously close to the coast. So this is something that we'll track over the next couple of days throughout the weekend, and we'll keep you up to date on our social media channels and right here on the show. Well, I told you it was going to be a busy one. Told you we had a lot to get into, so hopefully you enjoyed the show this morning. If you've thought and believe that you're getting any value, encourage you to support the show financially. $5-$10 a month over at patreon.com/Nick Craig goes a long way in allowing this program to continue on the air each and every weekday morning. I do want to thank the law group here in Wilmington, Melissa Gott and the crew over there, for their continued support. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. That's going to do it for a jam-packed Thursday edition of the Nick Craig Show. We're back with you tomorrow morning, live 7 a.m., YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts.